Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to another edition of Africa Link, coming to you from the studios of Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe. Coming up, Agnes Bayokoroma wins re-election to lead Sierra Leone for 5 more years after winning 58% of the presidential vote cast last Saturday. In a moment, I'll be talking to our correspondent, Damon van der Linde, in Freetown. The International Criminal Court in The Hague issues an arrest warrant for Simone Gbagbo, the wife of Ivory Coast's ex-president Laurent Gbagbo.
We believe this development underscores the importance of having justice for both sides in Ivory Coast. And until now, both at the ICC and at the national level, we've only seen justice against the Gbagbo camp, which is the one that lost.
These stories and much more to come in this edition of Africa Link. Don't go away.
Top story.
After days of anxiously waiting, the people of Sierra Leone now know who will lead the country for the next 5 years. The incumbent, President Agnes Bayokoroma, has won re-election after garnering 58% of the total vote cast. His closest rival from the opposition, Sierra Leone People's Party, Julius Maada Bio, secured 37% of the vote. The hotly contested parliamentary and presidential elections have been seen as a test of political maturity for Sierra Leone. 10 years after the civil war, on the line is Damon van der Linde, our correspondent in Freetown. Damon, can you hear me?
Hello.
Yes, we now know the results. What is the mood like in Sierra Leone?
Well, as soon as the results were announced that Ernest Bayokoroma won from outside of the Election Commission building, cheers erupted around Freetown, and now there's music playing. People are out in the streets. So generally, it's quite a cheerful mood.
And how has the opposition reacted to the results?
Well, the opposition has said that they will not accept the results of the elections, which they do not believe to be free and fair. I'm yet to reach them for an update on exactly what they will do, but the NEC chairperson, Christiana Thorpe, says they have 7 days to petition the Supreme Court.
And what happens next?
Well, soon the president is going to be sworn in again, and the country will continue as usual.
Well, thank you very much.
On Sunday, there will be the results of the parliamentary and local council elections.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Damon, and keep an eye on that for anything that develops. It had been waiting since February this year. Finally, the International Criminal Court has decided to unseal the arrest warrant for Ivory Coast's former First Lady Simone Gbagbo. That could mean she'll be joining her husband, Laurent Gbagbo, who's already awaiting trial in The Hague on 4 charges of crimes against humanity. But who is Simone Gbagbo? Sarah Kamara has this report.
She was not just a first lady. 63-year-old Simone Gbagbo was also a trade unionist and was actively involved in politics. This earned her the nickname in the Ivorian press, Hillary Clinton des Tropiques, Hillary Clinton of the Tropics. Simone Gbagbo is also a historian and holds a doctorate in oral literature. But now the mother of 5 will have to answer questions from the International Criminal Court. The ICC says Mrs. Gbagbo played an important role in planning the attacks on political rivals in the post-election violence in Ivory Coast that killed over 3,000 people a year ago. As a member of her husband's inner circle, she is alleged to be his alter ego. Fadi El Abdallah is the spokesperson for the ICC.
The judges checked the evidence presented by the Office of the Prosecutor and found that there are reasonable grounds to believe that Mrs. Gbagbo is criminally responsible as direct co-perpetrator of 4 crimes against humanity, comprising rapes and other sexual violences, murders, inhuman acts, and persecution allegedly committed during the post-election violence in Cote d'Ivoire. And thus the judges decided that it's necessary to arrest and to surrender Mrs. Gbagbo to the ICC.
The violence started after Simone's husband, Laurent Gbagbo, refused to accept defeat in the elections of 2010. This triggered a conflict between his supporters and the backers of current President Alassane Ouattara. Gbagbo was only rooted out after intervention by French forces. He was later arrested and taken to the ICC, where he awaits trial. Now, his wife may soon join him.
Authorities of Cote d'Ivoire have been notified with the request for the surrender of Mr. Gbagbo, and it's for them to surrender her to the ICC and to answer this request.
If the ICC does confirm the charges against her, Simone Gbagbo will not only be the first woman to be prosecuted by the ICC, but also the first wife of a former president who has to answer for crimes against humanity committed with her husband. The arrest warrant has been hailed by numerous human rights organizations around the world.
Sarah Kamara with that report. Analysts say the former First Lady was a powerful politician in her own right. Some saw her as the real hardline influence on Gbagbo, preventing him from giving up power. To find out more on her crimes and whether the arrest warrant was timely, I spoke to Geraldine Mattioli-Zettner. She is the International Justice Advocacy Director at Human Rights Watch.
Well, we were expecting more arrest warrants from the ICC in the situation of Ivory Coast, more arrest warrants on the Gbagbo side, and certainly the Office of the Prosecutor says he's continuing investigations in the Ouattara side as well. So the arrest warrant doesn't really come as a surprise. It was issued first in February, but now the ICC is making it public several months after, presumably, I would think, to increase pressure on Ivory Coast to arrest and surrender Simone Gbagbo to the ICC.
How exactly did she commit these crimes she's accused of? Because as a first lady, she was expected to be playing a positive role other than engaging in politics, isn't it?
Yes. Well, Human Rights Watch, which conducted a lot of research in the post-election violence, was not really able to establish the links between Simone Gbagbo and the very serious crimes you've described. However, that being said, Simone Gbagbo has been implicated in very serious crimes before. And I'm thinking of the post-election violence in 2000 and during the armed conflict in 2002-2003 in Côte d'Ivoire, where she was accused of overseeing death squads that committed very serious crimes in Abidjan and elsewhere. She was named in a report by a UN Commission of Inquiry in 2004. So certainly it's not the first time that we see her implication in very serious crimes. It looks like she was involved very closely in monitoring and in organizing some of the violences that took place in Côte d'Ivoire.
How likely is it that authorities in Ivory Coast will hand her over to the ICC?
So as I said, it doesn't look very good, given that the arrest warrant was issued several months ago and she's still in Ivory Coast. There are also national proceedings that have started in Ivory Coast with a trial that is supposed to start very soon. Preliminary hearings have already started and she stands accused there of genocide and other crimes. So it is important to remember that Ivory Coast has a legal obligation to cooperate with the ICC. So it's obligated to either arrest her and surrender her to The Hague, or if they want to organize a trial at the national level, they can also do that, but then they should challenge the admissibility of the case to the ICC. That means telling the court very clearly, we don't want you to take her, we want to prosecute her at home in a fair and credible trial, and the ICC judges will have to make a decision on that. So we can only hope that Ivory Coast is going to do good on these legal obligations vis-à-vis the ICC.
What message does this new development send to other individuals in the echelons of power?
I think it is an important step because it shows that nowadays, in this day and age, with the International Criminal Court and the development of international law, it's not because you're in power that you can, in all impunity, organize crimes. Now, at the same time, we believe this development underscores the importance of having justice for both sides in Ivory Coast, so not only against the Gbagbo camp, but also against the Ouattara camp that committed really also a number of serious atrocities. And until now, both at the ICC and at the national level, we've only seen justice against the Gbagbo camp, which is the one that lost. So victor's justice is, in our view, not a solution to bring stability in Ivory Coast, it is very important that victims of both sides get justice.
Geraldine Mathieu Zetner from the Human Rights Watch.
Know what Africa is talking about? Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Rebels in eastern Congo pushed south along Lake Kivu on Friday after repelling a counterattack by government forces near the new rebel stronghold in the city of Goma. Others moved north from the strategic road junction at Sake. The latest developments come at a time when the head of the political wing of the M23 rebel group, Bishop Jean-Marie Runiga, held talks with Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni in Kampala. For more on the situation, I spoke to Jack Kahoha, a journalist in Goma.
The situation is quiet, but there were clashes around Goma in a place called Sake. It's about 25 kilometers in the west of Goma, where two groups of militia called Mai Nyatura and another group called the Mai Janvier, together with the FRDC, started again to fight in Sake and try to take out Sake. They succeeded to push the M23 during the day, but in the evening, around 5 o'clock, the M23 succeeded to take back Sake from this coalition. And since then, people in Goma are a bit conscious. They are they try to be very observing, because nobody was expecting M23 to be pushed out of Sake.
You just mentioned that the situation in Goma seems to be quiet and calm, but we've been receiving reports of breakdown of law and order with prisoners escaping, and we've heard that the police and the army handed in their weapons. Is Goma secure, or how credible are these reports?
Yeah, Goma itself is secure, but maybe something also I didn't mention is that there were other clashes in town, and this also disturbed the people. But what has been done is that the M23 deployed a potent group of troops to Sake.
What hopes are there that something positive would come out of the meeting in Kampala between President Yoweri Museveni and the head of the M23 political wing?
Most of people are expecting the end of war, because even if in Goma we cannot hear any bullet, but Goma will be affected, because Goma cannot live with the villages, and the M23 and the other local militias, they are just positioned in Masisi, and this is to mean that it will be difficult for people in Goma to get food, and some other needs will be difficult to be responded. So if this situation delays, this is to mean that people in Goma will suffer. I don't know how they will be supplied in food and some other small needs. So the wish of people in Goma is that this situation can end as soon as possible, so that life can become normal.
What do people think about the rebels' demands of holding direct talks with the president?
The opinions are divided. There are some people who say that the government itself never respects the agreement that is signed. And also people seem to say that, in fact, the M23 were right to claim their rights, because this were not respected. But other people say that regarding the claims of the M23, they seem not to be very serious to launch hostilities. And these other groups thinks that, maybe there are some other agreements that are not put on the table and that people know, that make the M23 to continue fighting.
We've only been hearing about Colonel Sultani Makenga. Where is General Bosco Ntaganda?
Bosco Ntaganda, up to now, nobody knows where he is exactly. Nobody is speaking about him. And what we know is that he fled the region and he took the same area. He went to the area where Sultani Makenga was. But since then, no one knows exactly where he is. And people here think that he's the one who is commanding the troops, but under the shadow of Makenga.
I was speaking to Jack Kahoha, a journalist in Goma.
Human rights.
Now, the government of Zimbabwe has launched an awareness program to fight the growing problem of human trafficking. As in many other southern African countries, Zimbabweans looking for a better life have been lured away with false promises of lucrative jobs elsewhere. As Columbus Mavunga reports, there has been an increase in human trafficking since Zimbabwe's economy took a nosedive more than a decade ago.
Thokozani Kuphe, Zimbabwe's Deputy Prime Minister, says the government wants to enact tight laws to curb the crime of human trafficking, which she says is dehumanizing Zimbabweans. It is not just a case of people being taken outside the country. Trafficking also takes place within Zimbabwe, she told journalists.
In Zimbabwe, we have seen a new model of trafficking, where young people, women and children being moved from one area to another to commit heinous crimes on behalf of certain political parties. We have seen the abuse of young people during elections as they are forced to participate in political violence. We must also expose this form of exploitation.
The most common form of human trafficking is when traffickers exploit individuals, promising a lucrative job elsewhere, which often does not exist. Kuphe said Zimbabwe is being used as a conduit by traffickers as the country does not yet have a law that curbs their activities. She said the coalition would work together with the UN agents, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, to fight trafficking. I asked the IOM's acting head in Zimbabwe, Natalia Perez Anderson, about the level of human trafficking in the country.
Nobody has the statistics to say how many people have been trafficked, how many people have come back, how many people have been approached by traffickers. All we have at the moment is anecdotal evidence. That does suggest, though, when we go out into the communities, we ask people, we break human trafficking down to something that every single one can identify with, then there are very strong signs that it is a recurrent and growing phenomenon.
Zimbabwe Junior Justice Minister Obed Gutu explains why his government has started an anti-trafficking awareness program.
As you know, the anti-trafficking issues have always been top of the government's priority program. It is a pity that there has not been an awareness program, because it's not that the problem is not there. It is not the fact that the government is unaware of the problem. The government is very much aware of this problem. The only issue now is the public, the average Zimbabwean, was not or is not aware of the seriousness of human trafficking as a problem, as a human rights issue.
This lack of awareness explains why, more than 30 years after independence, Zimbabwe still does not have a law to deal with trafficking. The Zambian ambassador to Zimbabwe, Ndiyori Muliwana Mutiti, said all African countries should come up with good anti-trafficking laws to put an end to the practice.
Zambia, Zimbabwe has to work with other member countries within the region. Other member countries within the region have to work with others beyond the region. South Africa seems to have this pull factor. And other than that, we also have our own internal challenges. We need to come up with joint strategies that can be able to identify the challenges and be able to address them together as a team. If we decide that we are going to work independently, I can assure you that we are going to make very limited success.
According to the U.S. Embassy report on trafficking in Zambia, the Lusaka government does not fully comply with the minimum standards for the elimination of trafficking. However, it is making significant efforts to do so. It introduced an anti-human trafficking act 6 years ago and operates several camps for the rehabilitation of young victims of traffickers. But trafficking remains a major problem throughout the region. It's time for Zimbabwe to join ranks of countries actively trying to stop it.
Columbus Mavunga with that report on human trafficking. South Sudan is home to about 175,000 refugees from neighboring Sudan. They are fleeing war and hunger in southern Kordofan and Blue Nile states, where the Khartoum government is battling an insurgency. But many of them are still in danger once they cross the border. The UN Refugee Agency warns that the Yida refugee camp is much too close to the border to provide safety. The UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, visited Yida and spoke to reporters on Friday in South Sudan's capital, Juba. Our correspondent, Jared Ferry, was there.
The UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, has just concluded a visit to Yida refugee camp in South Sudan. The camp, which holds more than 65,000 refugees, is located near the volatile border with northern Sudan. But the United Nations Refugee Agency is hoping to convince most of the inhabitants to move to new sites in safer locations. On Friday, Guterres told reporters in Juba why he believes Yida is one of the riskiest refugee camps in the world.
We are deeply convinced that Yida is not an adequate location. It is probably the most threatened refugee camp we have in today's world.
That concern is shared by other agencies as well as the United States government, which has increased its budget for refugees in South Sudan from $29 million to $53 million for next year. Anne Richard, the Assistant Secretary of State for Population, Migration and Refugees, she said the U.S. has concerns that the rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement North is using the camp as a base and a recruitment center.
We did have some visitors to Washington recently from SPLM North. Well, our messages to them are really about the civilian nature of the camp and have asked them to please not use a camp, which is supposed to be civilian, as a center for R&R or for recruitment of soldiers. And especially we've asked that they not take children to serve as soldiers on the other side of the border.
The SPLMN strongly denies using child soldiers, and a spokesman said its soldiers only go to Yida to visit their families. Richard said she saw armed, uniformed soldiers when she visited the camp, but she could not specify whether they were rebels or South Sudanese soldiers. Either way, the UN is concerned about combatants inside the camp. Officials hope that the armed presence will decrease if refugees move further away from the border, and thus further from the conflict. There are other reasons to move, too. Yida is all but inaccessible by road during the rainy season, meaning agencies have to airlift food and supplies.
And that is why we need increased support from the international community, because this is a very challenging operation, probably the most challenging all over the world, and it's a very costly one.
The UN has been trying to move the refugees for more than a year, but with little success. But Guterres says the refugee agency and the government are finalizing three new sites. They hope the sites will be able to accommodate 25 to 30,000 people each. The UN hopes to convince many Yida residents to move by explaining that they will be safer and they'll have better access to services like education.
One of the problems the refugees refer is that Yida is similar in its environment to where they came from in South Sudan. If you move south, you come to more swampy areas that are not typical for their life conditions. We are trying to make an effort to find places where the refugees can feel themselves comfortable and where we also can feel comfortable about their safety.
The UN has its work cut out to convince tens of thousands of people to move even further from their homes. And as fighting continues in the Sudanese states of Blue Nile and southern Kordofan, the UN expects between 30,000 and 100,000 more refugees to arrive in South Sudan.
Jared Ferry with that report in Juba.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
Not only the podcast, but also more on the stories that we cover at Africa Link on our website, that is www.dw.de/Africa. And before we call it a weekend, a reminder of our main stories once again. Ernest Bai Koroma wins re-election to lead Sierra Leone for 5 more years after winning 58% of the presidential vote. The International Criminal Court in The Hague issues an arrest warrant for Simone Gbagbo, the wife of Ivory Coast's ex-president Laurent Gbagbo. The United Nations Refugee Agency raises security concerns over the Yida refugee camp's location at the volatile border of South Sudan and Sudan. That wraps up this edition of Africa Link. Thank you for listening. Mark Caldwell will be with you next week. Please do join him when you can. I'm Isaac Mugabe. Have a splendid weekend.